Are you ready for this?
Sean Merriman, a one-hand sack. Boom, 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 out go the lights.
This is Lights Out with Sean Merriman.
What's up, guys? We're back again on the Lights Out podcast with me, Sean Merriman. We have a special guest today, one of my former drivers in NASCAR. We're taking it all the way to NASCAR today. Jesse Iwuji, former football player, went to Navy. I always get on him. He was okay. He was okay. No, he was really good defensive back. But just my involvement in NASCAR over the years, I give a really funny story about how I got started in NASCAR, being invited out in 2008 by the Richard Petty's group. And I was the grand marshal to the Fontana race. And I came up and I had no idea about NASCAR. Remember, I'm from Maryland, Washington, D.C. area. I got no idea other than watching NASCAR on TV. It looks like a bunch of fast cars going in circles. And I was in for a treat. 2018 grand marshal of the Fontana races. And I'll tell you, it's one of my most nerve-wracking days because I had no idea there was going to be 60,000+ people there at the track. I had no idea that getting up there that close on the track and filling those cars and the energy was going to make me nervous, where I almost dropped the damn flag. So bringing in Jesse Iwuji, also we're going to talk too about the Dallas Cowboys, man. That's his favorite team, and some of the things that are coming out of the locker room, and Mike McCarthy coming out in an interview today saying that guys should be talking to him direct if they're men. So we jump from NASCAR to football. It's going to be a really good show. Jesse Iwuji. Jesse, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, you know, just living life. You know, ain't nothing cooking over here but the chicken in the pot, but the chicken would be cooking if the water wasn't hot.
You know what? I knew you was going to start something saying something, right? Because you look, because I know you've been up. I know you've been up since 5:30 already, and you probably accomplished 15,000 things already. So
just a few things.
And you can take off that trash Navy shirt if you want to.
Go Navy, beat Army. Hey, we almost beat Maryland that one year, 2005. I think you had just graduated, but I hadn't gotten to the Naval Academy yet. I was still a year away. But we got close. And then a corner that we had missed a tackle with one of your running backs. The next thing you know, that fourth down or whatever it was converted, and then we lost the game.
I remember that game, and the reason why is because that was kind of like the drop-off for us. It was like we about to lose to Navy. But you know what? Teams like Navy was always
tough.
Yeah. That was always a problem. Like, we always had a problem with Temple. Mm-hmm. We had a problem you know, Navy. Any one of the scrappy schools. I mean, mm-hmm. we used to sometimes go and have problems with Duke.
Yeah, Duke.
This is before they actually got good. It was just one of those scrappy teams that always gave us problems. So, so tell people a little bit about, before we jump into all your NASCAR stuff, mm-hmm. but your football.
Yeah.
And playing, you know, what years did you go to play football at Navy, and how did you get there?
Yeah. So originally from Dallas, Texas, and grew up there. Both my parents came from Nigeria to the U.S. So we didn't have, you know, football wasn't something in our family. You know, not like my dad or my grandparents or anybody played football before. It was really us, me and my two brothers and my sister. My sister probably could have played football, honestly. But both of my brothers and us, we all played football in Dallas. And, you know, as you know, high school football in Texas is huge. So I had the big goal to go off to college and play college football. So I worked really hard to put myself in a position to get recruited. And finally, by my junior, senior year, I started getting recruited by a few schools. And Naval Academy was the best of the bunch. So I just looked at it as a great opportunity to go to a really good school, get a great education, play football for a team that was winning a lot of games, and be able to have a career as an officer in the Navy after I graduate. So it was just a win in all different ways. So went to Naval Academy, got there 2006, started playing football there all 4 years, also ran track while I was there. We played against a lot of great teams. We had winning seasons all 4 years, went to bowl games all 4 years, beat Missouri, our final bowl game, which was my senior year. And that's when Blaine Gabbert played there as quarterback, and we roasted Missouri. I mean, it was 40 something to like they scored less than 10 points. Like, we killed them. So, and that's with our little Navy team, that we have a whole bunch of undersized two-star athletes.
that's y'all got a couple three stars here and there. It was once in the blue moon y'all catch a three star. But
yeah,
how was that balance, man? Because, you know, I try to tell people all the time, like, when I was in school, you had obviously your classes, football, any kind of study hall workouts, winter workouts. How was that, man? Because you also had to, you had duties, right? I mean, outside of football, you had track. What was that schedule like? Because that had to have been grueling. That had been crazy.
Yeah, it was grueling. I mean, you know, every morning you're up at, you know, 5-something, 6-something. You still have your military site type stuff that you have to do. You still have, you know, morning formation. You still have, you're wearing uniform every single day. At the Naval Academy, you're not allowed to leave campus throughout the week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you are stuck on campus. There's no going out, going and partying, going to Georgetown, wherever during the week, none of that stuff. You got to stay on campus. We have other formations throughout the rest of the day. We have other things you have to do as far as just leadership stuff within your squads that you have at the academy. All this stuff you got to do outside of your regular classes. Then when you get to your classes, the type of classes we're taking, you know, we're everybody, no matter what major you are, whether it's English, history, or whatever, everyone has to take Calculus 1, Calculus 2, Calculus 3, Thermodynamics, Electrical Engineering 1, Electrical Engineering 2, Physics 1, Physics 2, Chemistry 1, Chemistry 2. Everyone has to take all those classes I just named, no matter what your major are. So it's a technical school for a reason, where everyone gets a technical type degree. But it was tough. It's not easy. And then throw a football on there, which is like a full-time job itself.
I can't even imagine, because I was looking at like our study hall hours and classes and winter workouts, and, you know, depending on what kind of study halls you had after, it's like, Jesus, man, like, college to me was not fun. Everybody said they had so much fun in college. I mean, I love going to University of Maryland because the campus was bar none. I mean, it was a beautiful campus, but my memories of college was not fun. I was like, Jesus Christ, I want to get to the league. I'm trying to get to the pros. Mm-hmm. And that's why after my third year, man, I checked the deuce. I was out, period.
Yeah. No, it is. It's tough. It wasn't easy at all. A lot of people will say, you know, especially going to the Naval Academy, it's like a great place to be from, not always at, because, you know, yeah, as a college kid, you know, you're looking at all your friends having fun, partying, all these other places. Especially because, you know, right when I was getting into college, that's when Facebook was becoming a thing. And it was the first time you got to really see people's lives everywhere they were. And all these friends posting all these pictures of them doing all this stuff. I'm like, man, they look like they're having a great time. And I'm over here studying super hard, working super hard in football, studying super hard, just never having time for anything. So it's tough, but, you know, if you want to go do something big, like play college football on national TV, you know, you gotta make those sacrifices.
So that was like our connection, right? So I want to explain to people how we met. We met, at one of my Lights Out events downtown in Los Angeles, through a mutual friend of ours, Jay.
Yeah, right?
Jay Mendoza.
Yeah.
He was a kind of a social media star. And so I'm having this event downtown, and he says, this is my boy, Jesse Awuji. You know, we played football at Navy. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So you got that connection there. And he was telling me about a couple other things. But the last thing that he did, which kind of, I was like, you remember it was reporters, it was all these people I was talking to, and I remember him saying that he also is in NASCAR. And I was like, hold on, time out. He black though. That was the first thing that went through my head. Yeah. It was like, hold on, he's a black dude in NASCAR. And I was like, the only person I knew of at the time was Bubba.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't know of any other black people in NASCAR. I just didn't. So out of all these things that was going on at the event, I like stopped in my tracks, and I was like, hold on, time out. And so I said, did he just say NASCAR? And then we started, you know, he introduced us and we started talking. You know, we talked a little bit about football, but I had no idea about some of the other circuits that was in NASCAR.
Yeah.
Which is the K&N. Mm-hmm. So how did that start? So you left school, and you had your duties and things like that, but how did NASCAR come about? Because it was just so, it caught me so off guard
yeah.
when we started first talking about it, I was like, wow, man, this is crazy.
Yeah. So, right when I graduated from the Naval Academy, became a surface warfare officer. So, you know, I was basically going off to the fleet. I was on ships. My first 4 years, I was on two different ships, went on two different deployments. But during that time, like when I was back home in San Diego at that time, I would come back to San Diego and I had two cars that, were, you know, performance sports cars, and I would take them to, drag strips and road course tracks in Southern California. A lot of fun doing that. And, after a few years of that, I was like, man, you know, every time I go to the track, you know, I do pretty well, you know, why not try to take this to the highest level? Like, why not try to become a pro driver? Something like that. That'd be a really cool goal to achieve. So I wrote it on my whiteboard as a goal, become a professional race car driver. That was around 2014. And from there, I was like, okay, how do I make this happen? And I did a lot of research, did a lot of networking, and put a lot of pieces together to even get to a point where I could find my way into a racing series. The first racing series was a late model racing series at Irwindale Speedway. So I was getting into circle track racing.
That's the short track stuff.
Yeah. So got there and I was like, hey, you know, maybe this is where I belong. Maybe this is where I could start. You know, there aren't black people really racing in NASCAR. There's not a lot. There was Bubba Wallace at that time. And really, that was all I knew who were in the national series. So I was like, I need to get to the national series level and race there too. So I began working my way up the ranks. I started in late models. From late models, moved on to the NASCAR K&N series, which is now the ARCA West series. Started running in there. And then a year into that, that's when we had linked up. I remember telling you, I'm like, I was just thinking at the time, because I was always about networking and trying to just figure out, you know, oddball ways of continuing to, you know, make this journey, you know, bigger. So then when I linked up with you, I was like, man, I was like, what if we figured out a way to kind of make you part of everything that we were doing? You know, at that time, the team I was running with, we had a very open type environment where we could just do whatever we could, like whatever oddball things that most people wouldn't think of doing. I was like, why don't we make you, you know, former NFL star, all that stuff. Why don't you make you like a team owner, basically like a car owner in the series. I was like, who's doing that? No one else is doing that. Let's do it ourselves. And, you know, then that's basically where the relationship pretty much began. And it was cool doing that in 2017, I guess was the season we did it. And 2017, 2018. And, fun times, a lot of ups and downs on the races, but we did what we could, had. And, you know, you had a lot of great contacts too, and helped us with the sponsorship that we had that year. And, you know, all was well. So, it was cool way of doing things.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it was different. I was just thinking outside the box, and just my involvement, see what happened, how I got into NASCAR was in 2008, when I was playing with the Chargers, the Richard Petty group, they invited me out for the Richard Petty Experience.
Yeah.
And they came out and they made me the grand marshal of the Fontana races. And I came out, and at that time, I'm from PG County in Washington, D.C. area. We wasn't watching NASCAR. Yeah. I mean, if you did watch NASCAR, it was on TV. It wasn't that exciting. You didn't really understand what was going on. It just looked like a bunch of cars racing fast in a circle. You didn't know. And, you know, like in the hood, like back where I'm from, you knew about the Dale Earnhardts and you know, the bigger drivers. Mm-hmm. But you didn't know about the actual sport. So, mm-hmm. Me being invited out to be the grand marshal in 2008, they came and they told me everything I was going to do. Mind you, I didn't know how big it was. I think it might have been 30,000 to 50,000 people that day at the track in 2008. It was huge. I had no idea NASCAR.
I think at that time it was like probably 80 ish or so. 60 to 80.
Yeah, it might have been more. Yeah, 60 to 80. It was massive. And they told me what I was going to do. I got there to the track and they said, hey, we're going to give you this flag. You're going to walk up on the ladder. We're going to announce you and then you're going to start to wave it, but don't drop the flag. And I'm looking at them like, what are you talking about? It's a damn flag. You know what I mean? Who can't swing a flag around and whatnot, right? So I got there and I'm about to walk up the ladder and I look back and they told me, they said, look, don't drop the flag. We're going to announce your name. So they announce my name. Crowd goes crazy. They're loud. And then I look back and I said, I got this. What are you talking about? It's a damn flag, right? So I walk out there almost in the middle of the track and I got the green flag in my hand and they start the cars up. And you know, you're that close in the track and your adrenaline starts to go and you're like, holy shit, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, they start. So your adrenaline is going and my hands start to get wet. My hands started to get wet. So I'm like, please. I said, hold on. I look back again and I'm looking And I just remember them telling me, don't drop the flag. And I go and I start to wave it. My hands are, my hands are soaking wet.
You had two hands down.
80,000. Yeah, so I'm out there. I'm nervous as hell now. So I'm saying, please do not drop this flag now. They start the cars up. And that, I'll never forget the energy that goes through you, like your body being that close to the track. And this is why I tell people to get, if you are in a NASCAR, you ever thinking about it, get to the tracks, because it's totally different when you get there.
Yep.
So I'm standing in the middle of the track and they start the engine up and they start to take their, you know, the warm-up laps around, cleaning their tires off and doing all the stuff they're doing. And they said, okay, go. And I start to wave the flag. Now I hear, vroom, 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 vroom. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm going to drop the damn flag. I said, please don't do this. This is going to be the most embarrassing shit that ever happened to me before in my life. And so anyway, but that day is why I got into NASCAR, because going to the tracks to me was a game changer. It was way different than watching on TV. Yeah. I got a chance to sit in the pits for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I'm an adrenaline junkie, man. I like energy and I like, you know, stuff in this. There's no better adrenaline than you have being that close to the track.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. When those 30 or 60 seconds, however long it takes, or 15 seconds, however long it takes for them to come in the pit and leave out. That is a whole different adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
So that was my get into NASCAR type of deal.
Yeah. No, it's the rush is crazy. I mean, for people who haven't been to the track before, once you get there, being able to just feel like the engines, the sounds, the energy around, and there's so much going on. Even when they come in for the pit stops, I mean, I tell people, like, that's one of the coolest parts to me, is just coming into the pit stops, having these guys jump over the wall in front of these cars that are coming in at 50, 60 miles per hour into a box. Basically, imagine driving off of a highway, you know, at whatever highway speeds you are, into your garage and stopping just in time without hitting anything. And by the way, five people are jumping out in front of your car to take off your tires and replace them with the other ones and all that stuff. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So yeah, so in 2008, I went to, from 2008 to the time that we kind of linked up in 2017, I've probably been to, 10 to 15 tracks or something like that. I will go to at least three or four tracks a year. Mm-hmm. And when we finally linked up, and my whole thing and why we kind of doing what we were doing is to get more acknowledgement in the sport, mm-hmm. With minorities and blacks. Like, to me, man, that was huge, because when I went to the track, you didn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't see car owners. You didn't see team owners. Mm-hmm. You didn't see really any black people or minorities at the track. And I said, damn, people are kind of missing out a little bit. And like, I was trying to figure out why. I was like, maybe it's the not having access to be able to go to a track. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up where I grew up, it was a track nowhere near. I think the closest track might've been Dover,
right? Dover. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Monster Mile. Mm-hmm. So, but that was still a couple hours away from where I was. So we couldn't afford going there. We couldn't get to the track. So NASCAR was never really an interest going up. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? Maybe if we, when I say we, me and you, mm-hmm. and we link up and kind of bring more eyeballs to the sport, and do something that hasn't been done here. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might be different. Maybe you might have more people of color that's going to be interested in getting to the tracks, because it needs to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, it was cool, especially I think I can't remember which year that you did the thing where you brought all the kids to, was that 2017 or 18?
2018.
Yeah. So things like that. I mean, that was really cool and something I feel like was needed. Like, I feel like right now I get asked all the time, what does NASCAR need to do to continue to build diversity? I'm like, well, obviously, on the driver's side, crew side, and all that stuff. There's a pipeline of stuff that they're working on. They got the D4D program, all these other little things that they're doing to help build that side. But as far as the fan base, doing things like you did in 2018, just bringing a group of kids, and I know you brought a lot, but it didn't even have to be that much at the time. Maybe it's just 20 kids or something like that from, different inner city areas near the tracks, and just bringing them and having exposure. Because like you said, getting them to the track is what's going to create that fan. And then all of a sudden they're going to tell their friend, they're going to tell their friend, they're going to tell their parents. Next, hopefully the next year the family makes a trip to come out there, because a kid all year is like, I want to go back. I want to go back. So, doing things like that, I think, is huge and what the sport really needs to continue to build diversity at the youth level.
Yeah. So one thing, what Jesse's talking about is, in 2018, I got the opportunity to bring, about 60 kids from the inner cities, to the track in Delaware, to the Monster Mile. And, you know, the whole cause behind that from the start to me was, is just get them there, right? Let them see, let them be there, because there's so many different opportunities in NASCAR. And it's not necessarily always being a driver. Like, every one of those kids are not going to be a driver. You're not going to have an opportunity to be a driver, but there's so many different jobs and opportunities working at this track. Maybe you can be a track president or whatever that turns out to be. Mm-hmm. That opportunity is there. It's a lot of opportunity in NASCAR. And what's crazy about that is some of those kids from that day in 2018, they still reach out here. Yeah. And they send me direct message on Instagram. I get letters, you know, for at least about 15 kids. And for me, if five of those kids that day, if they get a chance to go and one day work in the NASCAR circuit, mm-hmm. wherever that might be, I'm like, that's, to me, my job.
Yeah, it's a win.
It's a win.
Yeah.
It's a win, big time. And what do you see, you know, because we obviously being there, and it's certain diversity programs is set up, it's certain things that's going on in NASCAR, but I just, and NASCAR is totally receptive, and they're open to open the doors to more Black people, minorities. Mm-hmm. But some, just to me, it's like that, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not enough that that bridge isn't built. And how people get it. What do you see as missing right now that what needs to happen?
Yeah, I would say missing wise, like you said, like with what you did, like that particular type of program, I think is huge. I feel like that should be happening at every single track around the country, not just, you know, that one time at Dover. You know, it's great and all for that time, but we should be doing that every, because we do it for the military, and we don't bring 50, 60 people to every track, but each track, for the most part that they go to, they have a program where they do troops to the track, where they have, you know, usually anywhere between, you know, 10 to 20 people. They bring military service members who are from the bases nearby. And it's a cool program because it provides that that experience to these guys who sometimes have never been to a track before, providing that same opportunity, I think, to minorities who just don't have the opportunity to come to the track because of maybe lack of money or lack of whatever, or just, you know, the parents are working super hard. You go to a lot of these families and it might just only be a mother who's taking care of the whole household, and she's working every single day, hours and hours and hours. I mean, she just doesn't have time, you know, or maybe it's a single dad who's just working hard to support the family. They just don't have the time to take their kids to, you know, things like NASCAR or even any other sport. So if NASCAR could kind of be that bridge to help bring these people in, to give them that opportunity that they just don't have, that would be huge. You know, as far as past the ARCA level, there really isn't, I would say, like another driver diversity type program that's really, I guess, continuing to push people into, like, you know, Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. You know, right now it just really ends at the ARCA level. Not that, you know, there are people who do go from D4D to, you know, eventually into a national series and stuff. You have Daniel Suarez, I believe Kyle Larson was part of the group before, Bubba Wallace, obviously. And then on the crew side, there's been people who've done the D4D program who've moved on to be on crews, like Brianna Daniels. She's doing really, yes, well in Cup. Awesome. She's doing really, really good. Really cool person. So, you know, but as far as the driver side, I feel like there's not really, I guess, a drive for diversity program in the national series. Now, it's tough because it just costs money. At the end of the day, no matter what we all do, tires aren't free. Vehicles aren't free.
Man, I know.
All this stuff isn't free. It just costs money. So, you know, at the end of the day, the companies that make all this stuff, they got to feed their families too. So there is a.
So just break it down to people. What is the average cost? So they know. Let's start at a decent team that's on the Cup Series. What does it cost to race per year?
Yeah, decent team. It matters what you say. What you mean by decent?
Let's call it mid tier.
Mid tier. Okay. We can break it into three tiers. Let's say a lower budget team, mid budget team, and high budget team. The lower budget teams, right, in the Cup Series, I would say each race, you know, depending on what they're doing and how they're making their money work, they could be spending anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000 per race. And then mid budget teams, they're probably in that $200,000 to $400,000 type per race budget. And the higher budget teams, I've heard of cost up to $800,000 per race. And I've heard of even more, actually. It can be really high, and it's pricey. And you gotta think about it. Like, on, you know, right now COVID time has kind of really changed a lot of different things. But prior to COVID, I mean, you know, for a full allotment of tires in the Cup Series for a full weekend, I believe it's like $40,000 or something, depending on what track, but like $40,000 to $45,000, something like that. I mean, that's a lot. That's just on tires for the weekend. You know, I mean, right. That's not including all the travel. I mean, think of all the haulers, the race cars, getting two of them ready for that weekend because you got to have the backup car. All the people that you're bringing, and you got all these people that got to come to a track to work on these cars, all the hotels, the flights, the food, all their crew gear that they're wearing, their equipment, the pit boxes. I mean, those things cost as much as a house, you know? So, all this stuff that's going on, that's why it costs so much money to race. And the funny thing is, as much as it costs to race, you know, in NASCAR here, it's nothing compared to what Formula One is around the world. I mean, Formula One, their budgets are like 10 times the amount.
Oh, it's yeah, ridiculous. Yeah. And that's my reason for being in MMA now.
So, it's pricey, but it's fun. And you know, there are goods that have money. I don't think is being thrown away. I mean, I just listed a lot of kind of what things cost. It's not being thrown away. A lot of good is being done. And companies who are sponsoring are seeing great marketing benefits out of it. So, there's a reason why it costs. I mean, you can go spend a ton of money to have a 30-second commercial on whatever, you know, TV channel, or you can spend, you know, that kind of money on, you know, sponsoring a car in a race and having a, you know, 3-4 hour rolling commercial for the race. So, you know, it just depends on, you know, what you want to do and what your marketing initiatives are.
You know what surprised me with kind of being in NASCAR for the time that I was, it's not just the lack of like diversity part of it and people not being in it, but also these companies, these black owned companies, these big black owned companies, like you just talked about, the opportunities in NASCAR and them not being in it. I'm like, man, do you understand? Like if you have a, for example, if you had a product you were trying to sell, if you're trying to have a product placement or whatever it is, there's grocery stores, there's convenience stores, mm-hmm. there's all these, you know, different companies that's in NASCAR, mm-hmm. that's one or two pits away from you. Mm-hmm. They're one or two suites away from you. I can't tell you how many meetings I've had, you know, when the race, before the race started, because obviously, you know, I'd be there for the drivers and the team owner meetings and things like that. But right after that is meeting after meeting for me.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just always surprised that there wasn't more big companies, black owned companies that got into NASCAR because of the opportunity there is just on another level.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of black owned companies that probably could get involved. You know, and you know, we're still obviously working on the diversity side of, you know, having more diverse drivers and things like that. So maybe they weren't getting involved before because they didn't see that diversity. Right now, I mean, we obviously are trying to change it. It's still not where it needs to be yet. You know, right now in the National Series, you got me, you got Bubba Wallace, you know, Kyle Larson is going to be reinstated here at the beginning of next year. And then, Daniel Suarez, you know, Hispanic driver. And yep. then, you know, there's females coming up too, by the way. So, you know, when I say minorities, mm-hmm. I don't just talk about color, it's about females too. So females are coming Absolutely. Up the ranks too. So, a lot of different, diversity initiatives are happening. We still need more, you know, we need a lot more color, a lot of different, you know, variants and genders, all that stuff just to continue to represent what America is. You know, America isn't just one race. America is a lot of races. So, let's represent what the country looks like in our sport. And, you know, obviously give opportunities to people who can excel and be great ambassadors of the sport. And, you know, that's going to help a lot. But yeah, I feel like, you know, black owned businesses, you know, time is now, jump in, you know, support. Everyone's talking about wanting to support diversity initiatives and things like that. Well, why not support in NASCAR? I mean, NASCAR's making a huge push, I think bigger than any other sport out there. They've taken hard stands, more than any other sport out there and earlier than any other sport. A lot of other sports are taking a while to make decisions on, okay, what are we going to do here? We're going to do that. NASCAR just stood up and was like, look, we're going to ban the Confederate flag. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they did it. Like, that was it. Like, there was no red tape. It was just, we're going to do it. And I love that NASCAR has been able to take the good stance that they've taken to help make it more inclusive.
And I'm sure that wasn't easy for them either to make those decisions. I mean, you know, the years that we were working together and I was flying to short tracks, the big tracks, wherever it was, you know, whether it was Iowa Speedway or it was the track in Monroe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll never forget you know, coming there and I'll fly into town wherever you were racing to, you know, kind of meet you there, and going to get my rental car and driving to the track and going through some of those neighborhoods, depending on where the track was. Yeah. It was one time, I don't know if I never told you or not, but it was one time, I think it was one of the tracks. I can't remember what track it was. I landed there and I was using Waze to get to the track, and it just took me through some weird neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I got there and I said, hold on. It was Confederate flags everywhere. It was everywhere.
Oh, man.
And I was like, damn, Waze.
Oh, man.
I was like, I got to go back on a Google Maps.
Yeah.
Kind of got to stay on the main road here. It's crazy. But, you know, I was proud and I was happy the way that, you know, when the whole Bubba Wallace thing happened,
yeah,
and how NASCAR came out. And it wasn't like an indecisive thing. It was like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And whoever don't like it, deal with it,
mm-hmm,
period. And how everybody came together, because that was a big step, especially in a sport like NASCAR. And kind of from the outside looking in and how some people may perceive the sport and the fan base. So when they took that stance, I was like, right on. That was dope,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, no, it was great. You know, with the Confederate flag thing, even the military, it's funny, a lot of people got upset with it, but even the military, the thing that everyone supports, we also banned that flag too. I mean, we really did a long time ago, but no one really pushed it enough. And now it was like official, like, hey, that flag does not belong anywhere on any base, because, you know, yeah, it's part of history, but it's not a nation. Like the Confederate flag represented a nation that no longer exists. The U.S. beat them in a war. It's done. The United States of America owns all this now. We're not split anymore. So let's get rid of the flag. Let's keep it in the history books, and that's it.
You know, speaking of history books, your Dallas Cowboys over there, they're making a lot of history.
Man. They're going through it. It's tough. I you know, obviously Dak Prescott is hurt right now, and hopefully he gets better soon. And can, you know, come back stronger. It really, there's injuries. It sucks. I mean, that's not a great place to break anything. You know, besides that though, but prior to that, yeah, I don't know what was going on. I felt like we had a strong team again coming in the year. We have all the talent in the world. I mean, the offense was producing numbers. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, Dak was out there slinging 400 plus yards a game. You know, touchdowns being scored, all this stuff's happening. I don't know what the defense was really doing. I mean, we were just letting up too many points. We're making too many mistakes. I don't know, man. It's the Cowboys every year. It's just like, they gave you a lot of hope. That's the thing. Like, at least there's some teams out there who just give you zero hope to even start the year. The Cowboys give you a ton of hope, at least. So you at least start on a high before you start coming down. You don't just start down.
No, they're tricksters. They're tricksters. On paper, they get everybody hyped up all year, and they trick you. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, being from Maryland, you either a Redskins or a Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
Back, if you're Redskins, yeah, or Cowboys, that was it. Mm-hmm. It was one of the two. And so I got to hear it either way. And I'm looking, man, and the first thing that comes to my mind is they kept Jason Garrett 2 years too long, and they brought the wrong coach and Mike McCarthy to hand over the keys to a Ferrari that was kind of like damaged already. Mm-hmm. You know, the offensive line is beat up, and you know, Zeke had three fumbles the other day,
mm-hmm,
and they're just not playing well across the board. And on top of that, you know, you got players in the locker room that speak into the media behind closed doors. Now, I don't know if you've seen that, but they came out and said how unprepared the coaches are. And this is coming from the players. And you can tell by watching the game. Like,
yeah,
you play ball. Like, you know, when you starting to lose a locker room, that's exactly what guys do. Mm-hmm. Like, start talking to the media, mm-hmm, start going and do stuff behind your back. Mm-hmm. And it symbolizes a very bad team.
Yeah.
And that's what they are right now. They're a bad team. So it's fun for me because I get a chance to talk trash to some of my family who are Cowboy fans still. But yeah, how does that work, man, in the locker room, and or just even with NASCAR, right? How does that happen? Because people always think of the drivers, they don't understand like how much of a team NASCAR is. Like, everybody around, if somebody is not spotting the race correctly, and I spotted a race before, which is kind of crazy.
Oh, he did spot it. You know,
I did. I remember that. I spotted a race before.
Tell
people what spotting a race is if they don't already.
Yeah, for it to be a spotter in a race, you basically, when a driver's on the track, you only have a certain field of vision. You can only see, you know, like this much. You can't really see anything behind you. It's not like in a regular car where you can look behind you and all that stuff. You can't do all that because you're just stuck in the seat and the full containment seat. You just can't see. So you need somebody who's on a radio with you looking around you and behind you to let you know that, hey, someone's right behind you. They're on your right rear, left rear, you name it. So that person is called the spotter, and they're sitting high up in the stands where they can kind of, you know, give you that information. And yeah, you were a spotter for, I think it's like Colorado or something like that. So that was funny. But
I was nervous as hell too.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yeah.
You got others.
Yeah.
You know, you're the spotter. You're the eyes and ears for the driver who can't see in certain blind spots.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I just kind of going out there and doing it. But back to my point, I was saying that, you know, people understand how much of a team NASCAR is, and you have sometimes the same type of thing happening where, you know, stuff gets out or people talking behind closed doors or what's going on with the team. Like, that is not accepted either. I mean, that's really frowned upon.
Yeah, I mean, that can happen. You know, with NASCAR, a lot of stuff is media. We do a lot of stuff with the media, period. And, you know, you can tell when certain teams are having issues throughout the year. You know, maybe a driver isn't getting the amount of, you know, results that they want, or wins or whatever it is. They might say something to the media, like, hey, you know, they could blame it on themselves. They could blame it on the team, pit crew chief, whatever. People throw blame all over the place. You know, at the end of the day, it's a team sport. It doesn't take just one person to go win a race. It doesn't just take two. It takes like the whole entire team. The crew chief could be phenomenal. The driver could be phenomenal. But if the crew screws up, the pit crew screws up, all of a sudden, you know, you can't win the race. The pit crew could be phenomenal. Driver could be not having a great day, and crew chief make the best calls, and then, you know, all of a sudden you don't win. So, you know, a lot of stuff can happen. So I think everyone being on the same page, everyone always communicating, that's what keeps the team together. That's what allows people to progress, because you're not going to win every single race, but you can make progress, and you can be doing the right things to set yourself eventually up for a win or a string of wins eventually. So it's tough. NASCAR is very different than any other sport. Every other sport is just one group versus the other, and just one of them is going to win. And NASCAR, you got 40 cars out there, so you're competing against 40 different people to try to 40 different people to try to get one win.
It's insane, man. So tell us what's next. I seen you got some stuff going on with the Xfinity series now, right?
Yeah.
I wanted. I mean, you moving right now. I mean, that from the plan we first started talking and, mm-hmm. and starting on the Canon series, which is now the ARCA West, mm-hmm. But and now moving up to what you know, you went to the truck series, mm-hmm. and yep. then now.
Yeah, so, yeah. So, you know, went from, yeah, Kane and stuff, and then ran a little bit of ARCA, moved up to trucks, ran trucks really since the end of 2018. I've still run trucks this year. I've been running trucks this year, but started running Xfinity stuff as well, and I'll finish off the rest of this year running Xfinity. This weekend, we're racing at Texas Motor Speedway, so I'll be racing there. I'm actually flying out today to go to Texas, and then I'll be racing also at Phoenix International Raceway. So,
I love Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix is awesome. You know, being able to have the opportunity to race the Xfinity series has been, you know, something I've been looking forward to for a while. You know, my end goal is to eventually race in the Cup series. You know, just it takes time, takes a lot of money, a lot of networking, a lot of partnerships, a lot of that stuff to get there. But working on getting there, eventually we'll get there. It just takes time. So yeah, working on that, and then you know, working on a lot of other big things too that's in the works for, you know, next year, hopefully, God willing. You know, really trying to boost up the esports component of racing at NASCAR. Right. We're in the middle of putting together esports tournament called so it's called E-Racing Association, and it's going to be right now, like there's other, you know, like iRacing type tournaments that people are putting on iRacing that will you know, they give away money and stuff. The tournaments that we're going to be putting on iRacing will be giving away big money. We're looking at giving away $10,000 for the prize pool for the tournament. So there's not a lot of tournaments in the past who have done that kind of money. There's some, but not a lot. And we want to be that one to do it and create series of events where people can go compete, win money, and this December, hopefully someone's going to have a lot of Christmas money.
So basically what you're saying is when you get up to the Cup Series, I got to come back on board because we need to put together some money.
if you got some stuff you can bring over, let me know. Let us know. Yeah, no, it's, you know, it takes time and money. I mean, it's just, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, nothing's free. You know, the tires aren't free.
Yeah.
You know, equipment isn't free. The time, it just costs money. There's no way around it. So putting together the right partnerships are what it takes to continue to move forward, or just having a really big business empire outside of it and just funding it yourself. You know, that works too.
All right, man. Well, look, appreciate you for coming on. Good luck this weekend. I wish I didn't have to fly out for business, because I damn sure I love the Texas Speedway out there. So
yeah, cool place.
Are you right in Arizona right after that?
Phoenix is November 7th, so we skip one weekend in there.
We'll skip one weekend, yeah. And this following week.
Yep, uh-huh,
right.
Yep.
Okay, maybe I'll meet you out there in Phoenix. Now, I like that track.
Yeah, it's a cool track,
so especially since they redone it.
Oh yeah, yeah. The infield. Well, the thing is with the way COVID stuff is, they're not really letting anyone on the infield, but which right. kind of sucks, because that's where like all the fun is down there now. I mean, they revamped the whole place. It's really, really nice. It sucks I can't really use it this year, but hopefully next year things will be back to normal. We'll see.
Okay, cool, man. Well, good luck this weekend. We'll figure it out. I'll get out there to some more tracks, man, before the year's out.
All right, cool. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys for listening in to another episode of the Lights Out Podcast with me, Sean Merriman. One thing about Jesse, man, he's one of the most hardest working guys I know, seriously. And he talked about, you know, him being in college playing football, but also being having his duties, being in the military, and his transition into NASCAR, which was crazy. We got a chance to meet in 2017 and trying to bring really programs and more diversity to the sport. We feel like it was more opportunity that can be done. And more things that can be done in NASCAR, not just necessarily being a driver, but also having, you know, inner city kids being able to go to tracks and see what NASCAR is about. Also talked a little bit about his terrible Dallas Cowboys and what they're playing like this year and the things that's going on in the locker room. But always, always great talking to Jesse. Wish him a lot of luck this weekend at the Texas Speedway and in a few more weeks at the Phoenix racetracks down there, which I'll be going. So thank you guys for listening in to another episode of Lights Out with me, Sean Merriman. And make sure you keep tuning in. Subscribe, rate us, do all those great things. We're getting some great reviews all because of you guys. So I appreciate you for listening in.